Welcome to The Forest Garden, a podcast for gardeners who want to upgrade their landscapes into biodiverse food forest systems. On today's episode, we'll be interviewing Nellie Ward and Alex Alvanos of the Boston Food Forest Coalition, a nonprofit organization that works to transform vacant lots across Boston into community orchards and edible parks. In this episode, we'll learn about the origins of the coalition, how the coalition is organized, how design impacts community accessibility, and much more. Stick with us. So why don't we just start off with each of you introducing yourselves, and we'll just take it from there.
Hi, my name is Nellie Ward. I use they, them pronouns. I am a Boston Food Forest Coalition steward and volunteer, and I am also a landscape architect.
My background is in environmental science and political science, and originally for my undergraduate degrees. After going through my bachelor's degrees, I became kind of disillusioned with politics and policy, and went and worked on a permaculture farm in Costa Rica for 8 months and just fell in love with permaculture design and regenerative design. Then I spent a couple years in the Bay Area doing permaculture and doing alternative forms of labor to get money, some kind of marketable skill set that correlated to permaculture that would land me in a less physically laborious job position. And I was introduced to the Conway School through a family friend. Program is a Master of Science in Ecological Design. And it really tied all of my interests together from environmental science, political science, sociology, permaculture, art, science, sort of reading the landscape and problem solving in a harmonious way. So that introduced me to landscape architecture. I went to Amherst and landed in the world of landscape architecture, and I've been doing landscape architecture for the past 6-7 years. And I've worked at a bunch of different types of firms, but the firm that I work at now is an ecologically based phytoremediation firm called Offshoots in Boston.
Yeah, so I'm Alex Alvanos. I guess the title that brings me to the conversation is the Associate Director at Boston Food Forest Coalition. How I got to the work, I'll give like the short version of a long story. So my yaya, my grandmother, immigrated to Boston from the island of Lesbos in an island of Greece when she was about my age. And her last job, if you want to call it that, was tending an olive orchard in Lesbos. And she had to escape Lesbos because there was the Greek Civil War had just started, which was after World War II. And there's books and all sorts of stuff written about it, there was terror and she had to flee, and she had the opportunity to immigrate to the US because of other family connections and happened to come to Boston, where there was a little bit of a Greek community. And so there's a spiritual connection to me to both trees and her connection to that's like a life force. She used to get a daily loaf of bread for tending the orchard that she would help take care of. And then like the spiritual connection to Boston, because that is what breathed new life into that part of my family, the brink to a really hard life in Boston, but also possibility. That's really the why that drove me to Boston Food Forest Coalition in this moment. It's sort of the unexplainable of the universe. My grandmother was 36 when she left and was tending that orchard, and I was 36 when I started at Boston Food Forest Coalition. So there was like sort of that spiritual moment that had to connect, I think, in my life cycle. And the more professional, like wonky way in which I got to it is I ended up doing a lot of nonprofit work in college and after college. That was just like what I was called to do. I thought I was going to do engineering, but that was just really not for me. And so I've worked on, this is like the sort of the fourth early stage organization I've worked on, a lot of which were startup nonprofits working on various things from education programming for K-8 schools, doing peacemaking work across Boston, to trying to redefine how the nonprofit marketplace works, to supporting and consulting for nonprofits that were trying to grow to serve more people and have more impact in the neighborhoods they were working in, to different foundations. So I've just spent a lot of time and partnered with a lot of amazing humans in the world to like sort of bring different organizations to life. And sort of that met the spiritual moment that I was in to connect back to earth and trees and Boston and giving back to Boston, which sort of led me to being like the org builder role, the second full-time mission to help an organization that was sort of on the brink itself and really grow and flourish over the last few years to live into our mission of more equitable green space and regenerative agriculture for Bostonians. So yeah, so that's like the short-ish version of a long story.
Okay, so for people who have maybe never heard of Boston Food Forest Coalition, what is the organization itself? What are its goals and what is its structure?
So Boston Food Forest Coalition is a nonprofit community land trust that was started by a group of neighbors in Eggleston Square in Boston, which is on the Roxbury-Jamaica Plain Line, as it currently is defined, and on the unceded territory of different generations of Native peoples who have tended this land for a long time. We were started in Eggleston Square basically because there was a vacant lot. Eggleston Community Orchard is its current name. The group of neighbors that lived there, multiracial, multigenerational, decided that they didn't want that vacant lot there anymore. And some of them had heard about food forest principles or permaculture or regenerative agriculture. A group of people that came together that was focused on how do we beautify our neighborhood? How do we grow food for each other? And how do we come together? They picked up a lot of trash. They told the city of Boston they were going to start activating the space. And they started to ask people how they could take collective ownership of the space so that they could make it a beautiful spot for their neighborhood. Eggleston Square has a lot of access to green space with Franklin Park and the Southwest Corridor, two different parks in Boston. And the particular place, obviously, urban settings have a lot happening in small pockets, sort of like edge zones in permaculture. There's a real like intense pockets of heat and of different neighborhoods. And this was like a really important spot to be able to develop shade, develop space for community and kids to run around and play in and all that. And so that was sort of the seed of Boston Food Forest Coalition, is this group of neighbors coming together. And they didn't know they were creating an organization at the time. They basically knew that they were tending this lot. And then neighbors started to knock on their doors and say, oh, hey, you created this lot. How do we start to do that in our neighborhood? We want to beautify, we want to grow food perennially. And so the organization had this moment where there was like, okay, great. We're just a group of neighbors, but we could start to create a 501c3 nonprofit organization so that we could actually start to work with more neighbors and do that in an official way. So at first the neighbors were like, well, there's different organizations already doing that. Can anybody hold land for us and start to do this? And basically everybody was too busy. And so that group of neighbors created the nonprofit. They decided to call it Boston Food Forest Coalition because they started to get in reach from across Boston. And there was some unpaid staff at the time. And eventually, Orion Kriegman became the first like unpaid official executive director of the organization, even though there's a lot of neighbors involved in sort of founding the organization. But he took the leap to say, okay, I'll jump into this and quit my job and see if I can continue to bring these neighbors' vision to life as a person who lived right around the corner. And sort of from there, the organization started to grow and say, okay, well, how do we serve these other neighborhoods who have the similar challenge and want control over their community, control over development in their neighborhood? They're, you know, hopeful and scared about climate change at the same time, want to be growing more food, want to do it in regenerative ways. And so they started to form a mission that is what we do now, which is focused on open space equity in Boston, or green space equity, parkland equity, where more neighbors having access equitably to green space in Boston. And so that's a critical part of our mission. Boston has a long history of structural racism and intentionality around excluding, especially our Black and Brown neighbors, from land and from their ability to grow food. This is obviously a national history dating back to slavery in 1609. That's very present in Boston still. And due to redlining, there's been huge gaps. So there's disparities between majority Black and Brown communities and majority white communities. There's an 80% differentiation in tree canopy. And I think there's about a 22% differentiation in access to parkland. I'm not getting those stats exactly right, but the disparities are pretty large. And I think about a 7.5 degree difference in daytime time to turn in the summer between majority Black and Brown and majority white neighborhoods in Boston. Boston Food Forest Coalition was really aware of those things as a multiracial coalition and wanted to have equity at the center of the work that we were doing. And so building food forest parks for neighbors that have historically been excluded from that type of access is part of our mission. And the other part is about climate resilience and responding to this crisis, climate emergency that we're all living through, and doing that in a way that promotes hope and possibility and action. And so supporting neighbors to actually build food forest park food and tend these permaculture-esque spaces, regenerative spaces, have control over how those are designed. I mean, that happens there, the barbecues, the fun events, all of those things, the harvest festivals and all of that. So there's like this open space equity and climate resilience. And at the intersection of those is sort of the heartbeat of Boston Food Forest Coalition. And we have 9 food forests in the coalition, 7 of which are in the community land trust. And the land is owned collectively by those neighbors. And there's also coalition sites where sites that are owned by a churchyard or by a different entity can still partner with us and be part of the network and share resources. 4 things that we do. We help neighbors build food forest parks now through the actual construction and fundraising to build the parks. We offer workshops and educational opportunities for stewards to be able to actually learn and tend the spaces. We're a community land trust, so we hold the land and the liability insurance and pay the water bills and all those things. And then we support stewards through technical assistance and forming teams. A lot of folks haven't figured out or don't like know how to engage their neighborhood or create a sustainable volunteer team over the long term. And so Boston Food Forest Coalition is sort of the backbone in supporting stewardship teams regenerate. So the Eggleston Community Orchard team fell apart during COVID, people moved away, all sorts of stuff. And so we were there to help start to just regenerate that team that we're at the very early days of starting to do now. So those are some of the things that we now offer as sort of the organization that's a few years into our work, trying to support more neighbors in creating these regenerative spaces in their neighborhoods.
Nelly, do you want to follow up on that? I mean, the Eggleston Community Orchard, during COVID, the support team fell apart and sort of the role of a steward for the Eggleston Community Orchard?
Sure. I am a new steward to Eggleston Community Orchard. I started at the beginning of last year. So I wasn't around when the stewardship team fell apart during COVID, but I was one of the people who kind of spearheaded it getting back online, I would say. That has looked like me and a couple of other volunteers, including Alex, showing up regularly and figuring out how and when we want to be there, what we can contribute to each of what roles each of us can play in leadership, including other community members in the garden, and what skills that we each have that we can practice, basically. So I have this like landscape architecture skill set and plant knowledge. And then we have this other volunteer who's kind of like an organizer person who's really good at kind of like including people and introductions and emails and sort of like that piece. And then Alex has been really fundamental in getting workshops going and sort of the BFFC, the Boston Food Forest Coalition, like support network, getting plants to the site, et cetera. So I can only speak for the past year of my involvement, but being a steward has looked like both understanding my own community better that's around me and also how I can be a leader in a garden space, how to work with other people in ways that like build momentum and also help activate and enliven the space that is really important to the neighborhood, but sort of went on pause for a long time.
So in terms of the sort of community events, you mentioned like barbecues and sort of get-togethers, that's really, from my perspective, kind of the backbone of how these spaces thrive over the long term. I'm also interested in sort of like the management that goes in and how the community comes together. Are there work parties? Do they end with a potluck? Like, what is the sort of methodology for how that works usually?
For our new group, we had kind of like a kickoff at the beginning of the season and sort of like a closing meeting at the end of the season. The kickoff meeting in the beginning was very loose because the stewardship team was still being formed, but we've kind of reinstated that this year. But basically it's like a beginning, an end, and then having regular volunteer days in between. And we had a really successful, I would say, like kind of closing of the season last year where we made pizzas outside in the cob oven that was built on site. And we put all sorts of ingredients on it, but some of them were harvested on the site and it was really fun. And there were neighbors around and we got to to talk with people, and like not just Eggleston Community Orchard Buff and Food Forest Coalition stewards came, and that was really fun. I would also add that we had a summit meeting, and Alex, maybe you can speak about this a little bit more eloquently than I can, but we had this larger meeting where all the stewards and leadership came together at the Boston Nature Conservancy. And there was like a couple of workshops, and we had a space where we exchanged ideas about, we had sort of our community orchard progress and goals, and each coalition group got together and discussed sort of like hurdles and things that we overcame. And then we all shared together. And that was really interesting because there were problems identified by other groups that I didn't realize that we had, and there were solutions that were identified. And so it was like this big, amazing space to share and exchange ideas that like kind of came from site-specific issues, very translatable. So yeah, I would say both the like closing and opening at our particular site, and then the like larger coming together, three events that are really like essential to sort of like creating cohesion and a sense of community in the organization as a volunteer.
That's great to hear, Nellie. Yeah, and as Boston Food Forest Coalition, we're a relatively new organization. So Orion likes to say a lot that we're building the path while walking it. And also each different food forest stewardship team, the group of volunteer neighbors that are taking care of their spaces, like Nellie and me, like I take off my staff hat and I go volunteer at the Eggleston Community Orchard. Each of those teams is in its own phase in its life cycle, depending on the team itself and how new their food forest was built, or where they were in relation to COVID, or sort of who's involved and what's going on in that neighborhood. So each team has sort of its own culture, its own character, its own life cycle. A lot of people just love to come together around cultural events and barbecues and those types of things, which is why we say that's like what happens at Food Forest, because the Eggleston Community Orchard, that group of neighbors planted apple trees and wanted to bake apple pies. So they built themselves a cob oven that Nellie was talking about using for pizza. So that's like been a cultural point around that space. And the Edgewater Food Forest in Mattapan, they have black walnut trees that rim that site, mature trees. Maybe they're like 40 or 50 years old at this point, predates any of the human involvement on that space in a way. Also, it's culturally important for that group of neighbors. Some of them are from the South, and black walnuts have been culturally important in their lives. And so we're creating a way to more easily process the black walnuts. We're basically creating a walnut processing station where they can crack open the walnuts more easily and dry them as part of the construction of that food forest, because they want to have parties that represent those nuts and be able to like bake, you know, stewards have already started to bake those into cookies and partnering with a local bakery. So that site has its own culture around sort of the mature black walnuts on site. And other cultural events like Halloween parties are important in that neighborhood. So they had a big Halloween festival last year, whereas some of the other food forest teams are just getting some of those sparks going for the first time. And some teams like the Leland Orchard or the Leland Cooperative Garden in Forest Hills area of Boston, they've been around for 30 years and predate the Boston Food Forest Coalition, but went sort of from a garden to a food forest, which is when they got involved with us. And they have a culture that the wonderful lead steward there, Kathleen, and other stewards like Alex Foster Kemper, all sorts of cultural events that happen all year long, and is really a heartbeat to that neighborhood because it's been going on for so long. And that's really what brings them together. So really incorporating how food and culture and climate change are interrelated, and how we can find hope and sustenance through each other and our relationships and breaking bread together is really important. Neighbors are organizing that all on their own, and stewards are organizing that all on their own. And then Boston Food Forest Coalition is also there to help support those events and, you know, provide some financial resource to make those events possible, those types of things.
I just wanted to say that I don't know, Alex, how clear we were about this, but Alex and I are co-stewards at the Eggleston Community Orchard, along with a couple other people. So together we make up the stewardship team for Eggleston Community Orchard, but Alex is also separately, that's a volunteer thing that he does as my neighbor, as a friend, as a community member, and then also separately, he's the associate director of Boston Food Forest Coalition. So that's why he has all of this broader knowledge of the organization, et cetera, if that makes sense. I'm not sure if that was clear to you at any point, but that's our relationship to each other. And then also the difference between my relationship to the Boston Food Forest Coalition and Alex's.
Thanks for naming that, Nellie. Probably helpful for the general audience.
So one thing I think we should circle back on, Alex, you mentioned the community land trust model, and that the Boston Food Forest Coalition uses a community land trust. For many people who listen to this podcast, the term CLT, this might be the first time they've ever heard of it. So what is a CLT and how is it used by the Boston Food Forest Coalition for the food forest sites?
Definitely. Great question. I'll give you my cursory knowledge of this as like somebody that's trying to implement it. I don't have like a degree in how this works. And a lot of people are very knowledgeable about community land trust. So I just want to preface that. Please dig into more information. But my understanding of community land trusts is they came about during the civil rights movement as a way for especially Black and Brown people in different communities across the U.S. to be able to start to have more control over their destiny of either land ownership or housing, et cetera. And then that took on a lot of different forms over time. I think a lot of people might have heard about community land trusts in the context of affordable housing. And Dudley Streets Initiative in Boston is one of the classic examples of a really powerful community land trust that has shaped the landscape of the Dudley neighborhood in Boston, the Nubian Square neighborhood. So there's a lot of powerful examples of land trusts. Also, one of the first conservation land trusts was started in the city of Boston by the trustees, which is now much beyond the city of Boston. People mostly know trustees for a lot of the work they do across the state of Massachusetts and but they were one of the first conservation land trusts. What is interesting about Boston Food Forest Coalition is like many of the early founders from the Eggleston Square Stewards had seen different models of this working. Orion Kriegman, the executive director, had gone into Detroit. And one of the big questions that a lot of people have been asking is like, well, who gets to actually control the destiny of our neighborhoods, of the food that we're trying to grow? And so Boston Food Forest Coalition wanted to bring that to life in the theme of equity and in the theme of control over neighborhood development. And so basically a community land trust is you're trying to live in a certain level of principles, most of which are on the board of directors of the entity, of the nonprofit entity, are mostly the community members that are being served by the entity. And so there's typically a third model that you might have heard about with like housing land trusts or other types of land trusts that have a third of the members are people that are being served by the program, like residents of the housing. A third of the people are from the community, like community activists or community leaders. And a third of the people are other leaders in that nonprofit space. And so Boston Food Forest Coalition, our like commitment is to try to have over 50% of our board be stewards. So like Nelly could be a board member. Currently, we have a few stewards on our board, and we're working towards having basically stewards control the majority destiny of where the organization heads. But that's just like sort of the tip of the iceberg. A lot of it that I've been finding over the last few years is really through really intensive conversation with neighbors about what it means to actually have a piece of land that is theirs and control the vision of the design and development of that land and be able to like then partner to bring that to life. So one of the things that we do is get a lot of input. We do door knocking. We talk to neighbors who want to build a food forest in their neighborhood, get a lot of input into what that looks like and show them multiple iterations of food forest designs that balance the needs of wanting to create a community park with sort of their regenerative agriculture hopes and dreams to grow food and harvest food together. And so they really are the final say. The neighbors that are in that neighborhood who want to create that food forest are the final say in the design of what gets created. So that's one other major way that they have input in that. And then they're the major folks, the stewards are the major people that then program the spaces. Nelly was talking about with cob ovens or openings and closings or harvest events or what workshops they want to ask Boston Food Forest Coalition to provide to them, like tree pruning or soil development or composting, et cetera. They're really in charge of programming their own spaces. And so Boston Food Forest Coalition is there to support the stewards. One of the things that we do is hold the land and the liability insurance to be technical assistance partners. Like, you know, I get a bunch of calls every week like, hey, like, how do I prune this tree? Or our peach tree is having some like peach borers again. How do I deal with that? And so we're there to help answer those questions and support people in tending their orchard or their food forest over time. And then we also are just starting to pilot something that's called basically a memorandum of understanding. We call it a memorandum of special stewardship that we're going to start rolling out to the teams this year. And we've piloted with a few early teams where we define the roles and responsibilities around the ownership of the land to try to make it even clearer and in a formal legal document who is responsible for what, so that it's very clear that stewards are driving the vision of their space and Boston Food Forest Coalition is there to support the stewards, but isn't the leading partner in that. So we're trying to both create like a lot of conversation and community connection and spaces where stewards can really and neighborhood Leaders can really define the vision of their neighborhood, and then Boston Food Forest Coalition is there to support and bring those to life and try to create all the sort of structurally, legally kind of things to back that vision for them.
Thank you. That answer really was very thorough, and I hope that really helps in terms of folks who may be looking to find that structure. Often I feel like with community spaces like this, the sort of the long-term management or the long-term success is something that really is reliant upon like a backbone structure that in collaboration with community. So that's all fantastic.
I'll just say, and that's all, like, I just said a lot of words about what we're trying to live into as a community land trust. And it's a really hard journey. It's a real cultural shift for people to understand that we are collectively, as a group of stewards, like Nelly is a steward, I'm a steward, there's like about 100 stewards across the coalition. And we're all starting grappling with, like, in a society where things are really like individually owned, what does collective ownership actually look like? And how do we participate in that? What does that mean? And what are the tensions and fears and concerns that reside around that? How does structural racism play into that historically? How do our current culture and capitalism play into that? So there's just like, you know, we're putting forth a vision of how we can collectively own land together and control development in our city and build a more regenerative, green, food-producing city together. And we're early days in the sort of walking that vision together and helping each of us step into what that actually means and wrestle with those concepts that can be countercultural.
It's really important work, and it needs to be done. I would like to pivot towards a focus on plants. This is the Forest Garden podcast, where most of the people who listen to it are plant nerds. And the policy kind of stuff is really interesting to me, but sometimes I wonder how much our listeners care about that versus the sort of the nitty gritty of like exactly what plant is planted where and what plant people responded to best, et cetera. When you were talking about like the black walnut and that neighborhood really like responding to that, or people wanting to bake apple pies because that was what their interest was in, I think that's really, really key and important. You know, like these spaces should respond to the needs of the community members. So I would like to know if there's sort of like themes in regards to these other orchards and community gardens that exist within Boston Food Forest Coalition, if they respond to different ethnic backgrounds of the community, or if certain community members said, hey, we want mulberry trees because those are the trees we grew up with, or we want, you know, name it, whatever woody shrub or plant or perennial. So that's one question. But before that, and Nelly, I know you're a plant nerd as well, sort of a question to each of you at the Eggleston Community Orchard, like what is your favorite thing that's growing there? For me lately, I've been obsessed with hybrid persimmons, Nikita's Gift persimmon, which there is one planted in the permaculture garden at UMass. And like, I just get so excited when it's like October at school because that tree is starting to ripen up and I'm going to get to eat a Nikita's Gift persimmon. And you know, that's kind of where like the love for these spaces really comes, is for a passion for plants. So I'm just wondering sort of at a personal scale for each of you, if there's something like that for you, and then sort of at the community scale, if there's a relationship there with people's relationship to plants for each of these spaces.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in. I'm actually standing next to a Nikita's Gift persimmon right now, which is hilarious that you mentioned that variety. I'm just in my little backyard here and I've planted my own little food forest. So I'm excited to hear at some point, maybe offline, how it actually tastes, because I think I have another 5 years until I get to know.
You have planted like the queen of all queen of fruits. Like it is the most delicious thing I've ever had in my entire life. So you said it's 5 years.
Oh my goodness.
Like 3 years from now or so, like right around year eight. Yeah, you'll be very happy.
But at the Eggleston Community Orchard, I think a testament to forest gardening is and we were assessing all the woody trees and shrubs across the food forest last year, and working with an orchardist, Ben Crouch, is a wonderful partner to Boston Food Forest Coalition, runs a great landscaping company, ecologically focused, called Land of Plenty. I guess a nice shout out to Ben. We're looking at a lot of the trees and noticing how some of the apple trees at Eggleston Community Orchard were some of the healthiest we've seen across the city as we looked at hundreds and hundreds of trees. And I think because of some of the permaculture principles that are used in the plant communities and the soil regeneration there. So I've gotten some really delicious apples from the orchard, which has been really, really wonderful. Maybe I'll pause there and then happy to talk about some of the other food for us, but let Nelly chime in around Eggleston Community Orchard.
My favorite thing that's happening at Eggleston Community Orchard is the hygge culture. It's not the answer that you're looking for. That's not a plant nerd answer, but we have had so much woody debris and material from like just years and years of overgrowth of the oak tree and various shrubs. And we've just done a lot of like cleaning up and pruning, and it's left us with a lot of woody material. And so we're taking soil from all of this branch material, and it's been really fun. And I'm really excited about that. As far as plants go, favorite things at Eggleston Community Orchard, I would say probably the black currants. Also, we discovered some goji berries growing last year. I'm excited to see how they do. And there's also several species of milkweed on the site. There's a lot of lemon balm. But yes, I would say my favorite things that when they're actually like blooming are the black currants and the milkweed. Oh, and the grapes. The grapes are amazing. And the grapes are so fun because everybody loves to pick them, and they're just like so surprisingly delicious. And it just feels like a big like community event when they're really ripe and delicious, because everybody's sort of like hunting, and it just, the actual act of harvesting together is very fun.
The grapes are so delicious. Obviously, Concord grapes are amazing everywhere, but...
In regards to some of the other orchards and sort of the community response, is there sort of a theme for like what people have responded to very well? I asked this question because in terms of like food forest design for public spaces, like you talked about like goji berries and some of these more obscure fruits, sometimes I wonder about whether or not they're recognizable by community members, if they're things that are going to be loved or eaten. And education is something that's part of that. But I'm just wondering if for any of the gardens, if there's certain plants that really are community favorites or stand out as being especially beloved.
Yeah, that's a great question. We love to talk plants. That is the heartbeat of our work. You know, one way to face into the existential dread of climate change is to plant a tree and harvest some blueberries and pick some cherries and do that communally and learn with each other. There's so many good plants across the coalition. I think one of the cool things is just there's such a wealth of plant knowledge that like collectively we can like better tend the earth and better know what we can pick and eat. So like through that network, one of my favorite plants that I've learned about over the years is being able to eat hosta shoots. So the Eggleston or the Ellington Community Food Forest Garden run by Miss Carolyn and Miss Thelma and Miss Estella and Emily, just an amazing group of stewards there. One of their big themes is food is medicine. And so they have an herb mandala that is representative of the different body functions and which herbs correspond to those through herbal remedies. And they've worked with one of the herbalist stewards, Lauren Almquist, who stewards at the Boston Nature Center, and to design that, to think about how to use those herbs over the years and how to incorporate that into their diets. And that group is also like, they have a wonderful, they ate their first persimmons a couple years ago, so they're getting excited about those. They ate their first muscadine grapes, which was a little bit of an experiment growing those up here. They loved those, and so those are flourishing. But they also, that's one of the few sites that has like some raised beds too, because collards and kale and other things have been culturally important to them. Some of those stewards come from the South. And so we wanted to make sure to create healthy, safe soil for them to be able to grow collards and all sorts of things like that. So that's like a big theme on that site. And they have barbecues on the site where they cook and harvest and eat that together. The Upham's Food Forest, one of the new food forests, stewarded by some wonderful folks, Kit and Desiree and Betsy and formerly Andre and a few other folks. And so they have Joe is an amazing steward there. I like to highlight some of our stewards because they are the heartbeat of what's happening. They got to harvest some of their Asian pears. We just planted their food forest with them over the last couple of years. And so they got to harvest pears and those were delicious. We helped to regenerate some of their mulberry trees for them by doing some pruning and some planting around them. And these mature mulberry trees started to produce really delicious mulberries again. One of their past stewards was from Russia and lingonberries were really important. We planted lingonberries for them and they're just starting to see some harvest from those. And then they're getting really excited. We're experimenting, like Boston Food Forest Coalition obviously loves to support native plants and species. And we put a lot of those in our spaces, from pollinators to food producing plants to celebrating things like pawpaws and wobush blueberries and all that. And we celebrate other types of foods that you can bring into forest gardening as the climate changes. And as we try not to do harm with what we grow, but also like experiment with fun things. And so honey berries or something we've been planting everywhere, which is like a more sour type of blueberry. And so the Uphams team, and those fruit earlier on than some of the other trees. And so they've just started to see some harvests of honey berries, which are really delicious. And they have maybe 15 honey berry bushes starting to grow there. So those are just a few examples of some of the food forests and the food that they're starting to bring to life and enjoy.
I also wanted to talk to one thing that you mentioned, Michael, about legibility of the food, like mainstream community members that don't have a background in like horticulture or like rain gardens or plants at all. When I first approached the garden, it felt like so overgrown, and it felt, when I first came to Eggleston, it felt like an abandoned site. And now looking at the garden, it's very clear where the paths are and the beds are, and like there's gathering spaces. And so that, and that took a year of all of us being more engaged than it had been due to the, pandemic and people moving away. But what I'm trying to say is that I think that legibility is still really important in these systems that we're creating to people who might not have the horticultural knowledge of an understanding of like a naturalized landscape, if that makes sense. Being able to see that there's apple trees growing, there's a apple tree sign that hangs up in our garden, being able to like see that there's grapes hanging off the vine. I think that these like more accessible types of fruits are really important to grow also, in addition to more like rare species. And for people to like understand immediately, like this is a edible fruit that is for me to eat, that I understand and have a relationship with already. And you kind of mentioned that earlier a little bit, but I just think that that's kind of an important piece when we get into design and thinking about how to include community, that it's not that we go off into this like plant geek tunnel where we're just planting these very obscure plants that are very, cooked or picked at particular times. What people really were interested in when we first showed up and, we were talking with the neighbors, they were expressing that they felt like the site had been abandoned and there wasn't a plate. You couldn't tell where the vegetable garden area was anymore, or what was growing there. And so while there was a lot of ecological productivity and biomass and all sorts of really good things going on at the garden at that time for like flora and fauna, for the community members that lived there culturally, it felt inaccessible. And so balancing both the needs of plant geeks with like people who live there and want to recognize spaces and legible pathways and areas and fruits that they know how to eat and interact with, I think is really important.
That's such a great point, Nellie. And that's like, I think, really core to Boston Food Forest Coalition's design philosophy has been starting to develop that over the years. And so like Eggleston Community Orchard, I think, is a great example. Like some of the early stewards there recognized that not everybody would know some of the things like goji berries that were put in there. And so the raspberries they put up right by the fence, that sort of lean over the fence in the summer when they're ripe with raspberries. And you're like, oh, I'm like walking by on my way to work or from my way to a friend's house or whatever. I can, you can see kids going by and picking the raspberries. And then you're like, oh, well, what is this? Let me actually stop what might be in here. This is like a food producing space. We've sort of done that across all of our sites. So the Upham's Corner Food Forest, and this is a testament to Noah McKenna and the Restoring Roots team of Prince and Dimitri and Chesapeake and folks that have come before, and Shannon, who's been helping out from the Boston Food Forest side. So they put in a strawberry rhubarb box right at the entrance. And so there's beautiful seasonal flowers. So you can sort of smell your way into the food forest. And the first thing you see is strawberries growing and rhubarb growing in the same box. And I've just been there like working one day, and a neighbor is like, oh, wow. You could hear them exclaim, oh, this is strawberries and rhubarb. Look at that. Like, so helping people make those easy connections of what they could do with the space is really important for us. Really being intentional about the plant design and accessibility. And so we've also just, we'll backfill this to our old food forest, but for the new ones we're building, we put into the funding to put plant tags on all of the plants that says what the plant is, what the variety is, and when you harvest it. And then doing that in multiple languages. All of our signage can be translated in the top 5 languages in Boston with a QR code. or we'll print them in the language of the neighborhood. And so folks can actually like walk into some of our newer food forests and say, oh, wow, here's all the plant tags that I can go see. And the welcome sign says, go find these five new plants that you, some of which we intentionally say are familiar ones and some of which might be new fruiting plants like pawpaws that they may be less familiar with. So we started to really think about legibility of the food forest for neighbors, as these are public park spaces that the stewards are obviously benefiting from and help their neighbors get educated, but also hundreds or thousands of people walk through these food forests that we don't know about or stewards don't connect with. And so making it really easy and tangible for them to connect with it is really important to us.
A book for our listeners to maybe check out is the Community Food Forest Handbook, done by Kathy Bukowski, who in that book, she sort of details the importance of having a recognizable fruit, like you said, like raspberries or blueberries, like right at the entrance, right at the threshold of one of these spaces, to sort of cue people to, oh, this is a space that things are growing, and like maybe there's some signage that says this is for me and I can harvest this. And those sort of cues are really important. And it also makes me think about Joan Nassauer and Cues to Care and sort of like the managed landscape of, or sorry, this is landscape architect jargon, but basically just, you know, that sort of like Nelly, what you were saying in terms of the balancing of, you know, you want to create spaces that are ecologically sound, that attract pollinators, both, you know, native pollinators, and create spaces for food production, but you also, you know, need to have accessible paths and want to invite people in.
I think the other thing that we've been learning, how to really connect neighbors and stewards to food, and is just like simple things like cooking classes. As we start something we started to do over the last couple of years, we're starting to grow that program. We're going to offer more cooking classes this year so that stewards can just like feel and taste things. And then, you know, when there's cooking happening and you smell that and you're walking by, you start to invite in your neighbors and learn or relearn how we can connect to these things. And this is something that I know how to cook. Let me share that knowledge with you, and sort of like getting back to our roots as humans, where we taught each other how to cook and work with different ingredients and experiment and things, share knowledge. And so we're trying to like also be for the general public and have signage and all those types of things, make, you know, grape trellises right at the entrance, conquer grapes, but also like really reinvigorate the sort of that network of mutual aid that we used to have more of in communities, and reinvigorate people to like teaching each other and being with each other and tasting food together.
That's fantastic. So last question, in terms of how somebody who lives outside of Boston, let's say they live in an urban center where all the things that we've talked about today in terms of equity and justice and lack of access to green spaces, these things are there, where or how should they start? What is the sort of the toolkit that you would advise in terms of getting the ball rolling? You know, like, how should someone look to replicate this model that you've created in Boston in their own neighborhood?
That's a great question. Talk to your neighbors. My experience living in Boston is like, I'm still like, I've lived in different neighborhoods for 5 or 10 or 15 years at a time. And I don't do enough just to like knock on my neighbors' doors and get to know them. And that's like what brings these kind of efforts to life, is especially in dense urban spaces, doing things alone can be really challenging, but doing things together can start to make things possible, both because like the joy of connection and partnership, and also then the political power that it can come from just having five neighbors saying, oh, we want to really transform this thing or grow more food together. So building meaningful relationships is really critical to our work and would probably be one of the first pages of the toolkit. And then getting really clear about what you want to be doing in your spaces is probably the next step. Like from a design perspective, like constantly we're trying to figure out, okay, what are the priorities for this community or this space? And really thinking through the uses, and then leaving room for experimentation. Like at some of our sites, like you, as you're building it, you're hosting your first events and workshops, and you're saying, oh, really? Like at the Edgewater Food Forest, we had an accessibility ramp and for the pavilion for their yoga classes. And so how do we make sure that there's a ramp for accessibility up to the pavilion, but also how do we have like open community spaces? And if we weren't actively like sort of playing with the space and testing things out as we were going, we wouldn't have like bring that space to life. And then like plenty of room for learning and experimentation. Like we're just like interacting with the natural world that loves to live and regenerate and do its own thing. And so just like taking the time to really sit and pay attention and seeing what the landscape is telling us has been really important. Like, what is growing here? What is the soil telling us? Who's interacting with the space? What schools or community centers or things are nearby that, you know, folks run by or like interact with this in different ways? So really listening to the earth, listening to your community as like you're designing and starting to bring a space to life can help sort of find the heartbeat for it. You know, different spaces in our neighborhood are used as outdoor classrooms, which we wouldn't have anticipated, but we're like, oh, wow, there's a preschool that keeps walking by here. Then you talk to the teacher and then they might want to get involved and they start to use that. Then you're like, great, you can use this as an outdoor classroom. Here's some of the plants that are safe to eat. Maybe we'll build a little schoolhouse for the kids, that kind of stuff. So really like listening to what's happening. One of the stewardship teams has been doing a wonderful job of modeling this. I'll mention the Edgewater stewardship team again. They really wanted to take a regenerative approach, didn't want city water hookups, didn't want city electricity. So we built them a solar panel, a deep cycle battery to power their movie nights. They also wanted like natural ways to take care of pests like rats, or some they noticed that there were hawks flying in the neighborhood. So just thinking of ways to bring those in. We built them some bat boxes to hopefully start to attract bats into their space that would hopefully eat some of the mosquitoes during the movie night so that they didn't have to spray or do anything like that. So they're really listening and trying to live out those regenerative principles just like by calling in the nature that's around them to be more communal with them.
That's all great. And thank you so much for once again, such a thorough response. I feel like we've covered quite a bit. I don't need to take up any more of your time. Thank you both. Where can people find out more about Boston Food Forest Coalition? And also if you'd like to plug anything besides Boston Food Forest Coalition, that if people can reach out to either of you if they'd like to ask questions. Where can people find out about Boston Food Forest Coalition and find you if they want to?
Yeah, bostonfoodforest.org is definitely the place to go. You can see our workshops. You can sign up for our workshops. You could get involved on a stewardship team. You could support the organization by donating. We have a grassroots donors program that really helps to fund some of our key projects, like offering workshops to stewards or building food for us. So getting involved by donating or attending workshops or sharing your joy team if you're in the Boston area, or using our resource library online at bostonfoodforest.org. We have a resource library where we're just starting to add more resources about like how to prune fruit trees and those types of things that our stewards have been asking for. Folks can reach out to me if, I don't know if I have the capacity for like hundreds of emails, but like if there's some folks wanted to, they can reach out to me directly. It's alexalvanos@bostonfoodforest.org. Yeah, I guess since we're promoting things, I lead a band called Alex and the People, and we do a lot of stuff and we wrestle with climate change in our songs and all that kind of stuff. So Alex and the People is something I'll put out there too.
And as for me, as far as plugging, aside from the Boston Food Forest Coalition, I work for a really amazing person named Kate Kennan, who runs Offshoots. We are a landscape architecture firm in Charlestown. We are a super horticultural, geeky group of people who work on mostly public projects, doing vegetative management plans, public parks and streetscapes. And we also do some higher end residential projects for clients who are interested in sustainability and ecological design. And we are always looking for very talented landscape architects and landscape architectural designers to join our team. You can find Offshoots at offshootsinc.com. And I am the lead singer-songwriter of a band named Black Sky that is based out of Holyoke, Massachusetts. You can find our music at blacksky.bandcamp.com.
I'll just close with stick with it. This work can be really hard and tiring, and there's hot days and backward steps. And it's like, especially if you're working with communities and dense urban areas, it can be, you know, tiring and difficult at times. And it's really important, critical work, you know, being stewards of this earth at this moment of climate crisis that we're all living through. And so find those people that you want to connect with and find joy and restoration through the work together, and you can make it happen. We say a lot of things on podcasts like this. It can sound like, okay, great, it'll just be butterflies and rainbows and persimmons trees, and it can be a hard road sometimes, but it's definitely worth it when you bite into that first pear with your neighbors and you're like, oh, we're doing this is happening.
Wise words, and a great place to end our episode. Thank you so much, Nelly and Alex, for spending your time with us and sharing so much really incredible information. I'm sure our listeners really, really appreciate it. And to our listeners who stuck around this long, thank you, and we'll see you next time.